This episode contains description and discussion of the sexual abuse of children.
Welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Drexel.
And I'm Devin. And today on the pod, we are going to talk about the government shutdown.
Dun, dun, dun.
And the sort of update this morning, how they've come to an agreement on the shutdown.
Guys, I'm furious.
I know. It's a whole hot mess.
I'm so mad.
It's a whole hot mess.
I know a lot of you guys are mad, too. And I'm very excited to talk about how mad I am.
Yes, absolutely. And then we also have Sarah's shouty soapbox. She's going to be talking about Larry Nassar and what's been going on with
Allie Raisman and all that.
Yeah. And so that's going to be an intense segment. So, Drexel, you just got back from your bachelor party.
I did.
In NOLA. How was it?
It was great.
Yeah.
I survived.
I'm so glad.
If you follow me on Instagram, you saw the 1,000 stories that we did. I don't know what happened. I don't even remember half of them.
Right.
But I do remember seeing like the little, you know, when you do an Instagram story and it's got the little dots and you can see how many stories there were. Far too many.
There were a lot. I watched a lot of them.
Yeah.
It was a lot of you and your friends singing karaoke.
Yeah. We took over quite a few bars that were not karaoke and we made it karaoke.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was also 30 degrees in New Orleans.
That's awful.
And so there was not that many people. It sleeted. It was snowing.
No.
In New Orleans. And
but climate change isn't real,
right? Climate change is not, right. And we were walking down Bourbon Street. There was nobody there.
Mm.
And we just sang Rent right on down the street as if we owned the place.
That's actually amazing.
Yeah, it was great. It was a good time.
Yeah, and then, of course, the Women's March was this past weekend.
Yeah.
So I'll talk a little bit about that in my gratitude check.
I know. I'm so sad I missed it.
I know.
Because I got sick.
But I'm glad you're here now.
I am glad I'm here. I sound a little sick right now, but I'm actually not. Cause I'm just a little residual sick. That's what happens to guys because we're babies. Okay, Devin, let's get into some of the listener feedback from last week.
Yes. Yeah, so we have one email from a listener, Claire. She said, quote, "First and foremost, I want to say thank you for creating a podcast that is the duct tape holding my soul together in these trying times. Super quick but important note. In a recent podcast, Drexel referred to the Olympics and Special Olympics as happening in South Korea. It's the Olympics and the Paralympics that take place in Pyeongchang next month. The Special Olympics are a separate event. The next one occurs in 2019 in Abu Dhabi. With all the work that Hellbent does to create an inclusive and respectful conversation, and you're doing that very well, it's important to use the right words, especially when describing groups of people. I think it's a mark of how much respect Hellbent has for these conversations that this one slip really stuck out to me when I heard it. Thank you for everything you do to create a better conversation. You are helping me become a better and more informed feminist, and I am so here for it. I finally got to see The Last Jedi, and so in the words of Amelin Holdo, Godspeed, Rebels."
Yeah, thanks, Claire, for definitely pointing that out. I in these conversations, we talk so fast sometimes
that
we can always forget, and not really pay attention to what we're saying. And so I definitely appreciate folks pointing that out.
Yeah.
Because it's good for us.
Yes. Yes. It's good to keep us accountable. And then a couple of updates. First, Sarah and I have mentioned it. We're doing Instagram stories. If you follow us on Instagram at HellbentPod, Sarah and I are putting up things we think about at the news. She's doing mini Sarah's shouty soapboxes, and I'm doing what we're calling Devin's dumpster fire debriefs.
Nice. I like it.
And then we just put up a story of Drexel here in the studio.
Yeah. Sorry. I look like I just came back from vacation, like just disheveled. But I promise you, I look so much better in person.
It's definitely a good time over there. Also, Patreon content is resuming today.
Woo woo!
I know. So stay tuned for more details during Sarah's shouty soapbox. And you can find us on Patreon at patreon.com/hellboundpodcast. And we've been talking, we're in the process of going through all the emails we got in response to our call to interview Democratic women running for office. We got tons of emails. We're going to pick as many as we can for the main show, and then we're going to interview as many more as we can for Patreon, and those episodes of our Patreon will be free for everyone. You don't have to be a supporter to see them. We just want to make sure we interview as many women as we can. Unfortunately, we do have limited time on the show, so hopefully we can get the word out about these women to as many people as possible. Just a side note, we haven't talked about Patreon in a while, but last we spoke, I believe, Patreon had changed their fee schedule and was making it more expensive for patrons to support creators. And that has, they've gone back to the original fee schedule. So all the fees are now processed on the creator side. And so if you donate $1, you just donate $1. There's no fees associated with it. There was a lot of pushback from creators when Patreon did that. So I'm glad that they went back. A big part of my personal self-care is taking good care of my skin. I'm a skincare product hoarder, and I'm always looking for the newest way to take care of my face. Tula is a skincare company that focuses on taking care of your skin from the inside out. That's why I love Tula's line of balancing skincare. It's made with probiotics and other powerful skin superfoods like vitamin C, blueberry, and flaxseed. And if that sounds fucking delicious, that's because it is, though you probably shouldn't eat the creams themselves. It's like a healthy smoothie for your skin. They are also among the first to use probiotics in their products, and probiotics are at the forefront of the newest skincare research. I personally love Tula because the products are powerful but gentle. I've struggled with acne my whole life, and since using their products, I haven't triggered a single breakout that I cannot directly attribute to the Trump administration. I'm pretty sure that's as close to magic skincare as I'm gonna get. The entire line was created by a practicing gastroenterologist, and she, like so many women before her, took a new creative approach to an old problem. She knew that there were no quick fixes and that beauty starts from the inside out. Using that logic, she created products that only use high-quality ingredients to create a long-term healthy skin solution. I love when badass women create badass products. So, go to Tula.com/hellbent to try Tula probiotic skincare today. Get 20% off and free shipping on your order with the promo code at the top of the screen. That's Tula, Tula.com/hellbent, and use the promo code on screen for your 20% off your Tula purchase and free shipping. Tula.com/hellbent. Okay, Drexel, so let's jump right in. We have to talk about this government shutdown that happened over the weekend. So can you tell us what happened on Friday and kind of where we are now?
So I know that probably a lot of our listeners in our lifetime have only seen a handful of shutdowns happen. So this one was a little bit different than some of the ones that we've seen in the past. It was a little bit more volatile, but I think it has a lot to do with the climate that we're in right now. And it was definitely something to watch. I mean, especially on this weekend where there was like football and the SAG Awards and stuff like that. So Friday at midnight, the government ran out of money. Chuck Schumer had made Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump an offer. So if you had been watching any of the news last week, Chuck Schumer had gone to a meeting at the White House, made a deal with the president. It kind of reminded me of that deal that Dianne Feinstein put on the spot with Donald Trump. And like, he just, if you guys remember that conversation with Dianne Feinstein last week, where Dianne Feinstein was like, so do you think that we can have a clean bill on immigration? Donald Trump was like, yes. And then the Republicans were like, what are you talking about? I have a feeling that something like that happened in the White House. That's why Chuck Schumer came out of that meeting with Donald Trump very confident in something moving forward, especially on immigration. But then John Kelly and Stephen Miller, of course, jumped in and made that a different reality for that. So
I didn't realize that John Kelly was a hardliner on immigration.
Well, if you remember when he was Secretary of Homeland Security, he was a huge proponent of the crackdown.
Yeah.
He wasn't like that during the Obama administration. That probably had a lot to do with the fact that President Obama, he speaks for the president.
Right.
And he certainly could not do what he probably wanted to do. I'm a little surprised, being a military kid, especially from the Marine Corps, that John Kelly has this stance on immigration.
Right.
Considering how many Marines are immigrants. But it is telling about who's running the White House. I actually just read an article, a piece in Vanity Fair right before we started recording that Ivanka Trump is looking to replace John Kelly. Ivanka Trump is looking to that. Ivanka Trump is looking to replace John Kelly. Like, how many times do you have to say that? It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the rejection was the final blow. The rejection was the final blow that sent the government on course for the first shutdown since 2013. The stage was set a week earlier when Donald Trump moved to squash a bipartisan immigration deal, which had already been made.
Yeah.
The deal had been done.
Right, right. And then that was the meeting that Trump made those shithole comments.
Right.
And turned the media coverage upside down.
Right.
And the problem is that there was this bipartisan agreement on immigration and DACA.
Correct.
They went to the president, and the president made this comment about shithole countries. And then kind of quashed that bipartisan deal. And so that set the stage for this government shutdown, because the Democrats have been holding the line saying, we will not pass a government spending bill unless there is a fix and protection for DACA recipients or Dreamers. And they held firm to that. What's frustrating about this is that the White House on Friday immediately started spinning this as Schumer's shutdown, and that it was all the Democrats' fault for shutting down the government, which I find preposterous, considering the Republicans control all three branches of government.
Right. I mean, you know, I just want people to look at it a couple of ways. I want definitely people to remember that Republicans really control Congress. Not only do they control Congress, but they control what Congress sees on the floor.
Right.
So even though people are like, well, Democrats have the votes to help Republicans do that, it's Republicans, Mitch McConnell, Paul Ryan, who ultimately decide what is seen on the floor. So I have a huge problem with what has been going on, at least today, what we saw with Mitch McConnell, what we've seen with Mitch McConnell and Merrick Garland, what we've seen Mitch McConnell on any piece of legislation, his word to Jeff Flake, his word to Susan Collins, at least Lisa Murkowski got something out of the tax deal. So, you know, I think that people have to remember that, yes, Democrats do have the votes to help keep the government open.
Sure.
But it's not the Democrats' job to save a majority that can't govern themselves.
Right.
If you can't govern yourself, how, in the words of RuPaul, if you can't govern yourself, how the hell are you going to govern somebody else? Like, that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ooh, I should coin that. I'm telling RuPaul that. But you know what I mean? It's just like Republicans out there calling it the Schumer shutdown. Now, I get it. It sounds funny because of the alliteration.
Right.
But it's not true.
Right.
And we saw over the weekend, Chuck Schumer, Claire McCaskill, Kamala Harris, we saw a bunch of senators come out there and try to piecemeal certain parts that Republicans were using as bargaining chips or talking points over the weekend. Oh, you want to talk about the military? Well, we're going to introduce a bill on the floor to make sure the military gets paid. Oh, let's talk about CHIP. Okay,
right.
We're going to make sure that CHIP gets funded outside of what everything outside of the government. But because of all the hoopla that was happening this weekend, and I was texting with somebody or was talking to somebody earlier, and I just said, look, nobody was paying attention this weekend.
Right. Right.
The the NFC AFC championships were yesterday. Nobody was paying attention. Now they might pay attention because, you know, it's two teams that I don't think a majority of America really cares about. But I think that if Democrats had held the line, they could have this morning gone on the Capitol steps and told the American people exactly what was going on.
Right. Well, you know, I talked a little bit about this in one of the Instagram stories when the government was first heading for the shutdown on Friday. The House originally had passed a stopgap spending bill that kept the government funded for 4 weeks and also had a 6-year CHIP renewal attached to it that the House passed. And almost every Democrat, if not every Democrat in the House, voted against it to then send to the Senate. It passed because there's a Republican majority in the House. They don't need any Democrats. Tom Garrett, who is from Virginia, he's a Republican from Virginia, was on Anderson Cooper, was talking to Anderson Cooper, and he is a member of the ultra-conservative Freedom Caucus. Those were the guys who literally wouldn't vote for the ACA repeal because it didn't go far enough. It didn't take healthcare away from enough people, apparently. And he was saying that he was so disappointed in his Democratic colleagues that they were refusing to fund a 6-year CHIP renewal. And that's how he framed it, that it was their fault that they couldn't renew Chip because they wouldn't pass this stopgap spending bill. And it's such bullshit because, you know, like you said, you can do these piecemeal things. You can talk about the military. You can get Chip funded. If it were so important to Republicans to get Chip funded, they could have dealt with it at any point since funding lapsed in September.
They could have dealt with it in September and been done with it. But Republicans, as we've seen, certainly wait to use things like this to their advantage.
Right.
And it's unfortunate that parents had to deal with this,
right?
Not knowing over these past few months, even though they kind of gave an extension and stuff like that. It's obviously unfortunate that we have allowed, particularly Democrats, have allowed Republicans to hold hostage American dreamers,
right,
over these past few months. And it's almost an intimidation tool and a cruel.
Right.
To an extent, I mean, you could make a cruel and unusual punishment. You could make a constitutional argument for that, I'm sure, at some point. But I think that that's something that Democratic voters will have to remember going into 2018, going into the midterms.
Right.
But the other side of that is, I think people, like, there's two sides. Like, I'm furious at the way that Democrats handled it.
Right.
I do think that it's a double-edged sword for Democrats in the sense that we know we want to be the grown-ups, but we also don't want to be the grown-ups. And I think, right, that's where people are sitting right now,
right,
is people want the Democrats to fight because we haven't seen Democrats fight for the past couple of years.
Right.
And it's been very difficult with Republican majorities, not only in the state legislatures, but in the Congress. But the other side of that is, yeah, Chuck Schumer has to kind of govern just a little bit. We saw the vote today. At least every Democrat that we believe will be running for president,
yep,
in 2020 voted against the stopgap bill.
Right.
So maybe that was the bargain. Maybe protect my side.
Right.
Protect my
face. Protect the optics.
Protect the optics for a certain group of people.
Right.
And then allow the other side to do that.
Right. Right. Well, Brian Fallon tweeted, and this was over the weekend, how we kind of got here in the first place. And I really liked the way he put it. It was very succinct. He said, quote, recap of how we got here. 1, Trump rescinds DACA, demands Congress act within 6 months. 2, Senate forms bipartisan talks on DACA. 3, Trump promises to sign whatever the group comes up with. 4, group reaches bipartisan deal. 5, Trump does 180, rejects deal, leaving DACA kids to be deported.
Right.
And so, you know, all of this government shutdown really started back in September when Trump unceremoniously said that he was going to end the DACA program and that Congress had to fix it.
Right. And to the executive branch's credit, yes, Congress should be the ones to legislate what happens.
Sure.
And the executive branch carries that out. So from a more traditional Republican quote unquote standpoint, yeah, that's the way to go about it. But you can't let the legislature go through all that entire process that you've asked them to do and then be like, actually, nope, psych. I just wanted to see if you guys were going to do it.
Yeah.
It's very cruel and
right.
it's a waste of time. And I can't imagine what Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan are like, and what's happening in their brains.
Right.
Because I'd be mad.
Oh, I'd be super pissed.
Even if it was a Democrat.
Oh, yeah.
No, I mean, you'd be like, so we went through this. No.
This
the
whole
legislature
charade.
Is a check on the executive.
Right, right,
we
right.
We send you what we want, and you sign it or don't sign it, and we go through the process again. So, yeah, I mean, but it just goes to show that Republicans really don't know how to govern.
Well, yeah, and there was actually a great line in a New York Times article about this. It said, quote, the misconception is that the president does not know what he does not know. In my experience, the reality is that the president knows what he does not know and does not think he needs to know it, which I thought was a very interesting way to put all of this.
Very Dr. Seuss.
Very Dr. Seuss. Yeah.
Something that Trump can read.
yeah, but there's a real issue here. Even it was Mitch McConnell who was like, Or it was Mitch McConnell who was like, Mr. President, we just want to know what you want here. Right. You know, there it's been so unclear, and to the point of Republicans need to learn to govern themselves. They need to learn to govern in general. Like, if you can't even decide what it is you're asking, you know, that's really the first step. You identify the problem before you can identify the solution.
I want to know what Stephen Miller has on Donald Trump for Stephen Miller to have such a stronghold on the White House. I've never seen a legislative director have so much power as this Santa Monica elitist, racist person in Stephen Miller.
And isn't he like 12 years old or something? Yeah, I mean,
he's young with a very bad receding hairline. And that's probably due to a lot of the stress that he's under of making America racist again. It's hard work to be racist, actually.
Mara, make America racist again.
Oh, I like that. Mara. I mean, I don't like that, but it like, works.
Catchy.
Yeah, it's catchy.
Yeah, it's really frustrating because it has seemed, you know, we saw with this initial meeting with Stephen Miller there, and then with John Kelly and Stephen Miller again, it seems like a lot of this immigration policy is not being decided or discussed by the president or people in the legislative branches, but rather these people outside of these processes that seem to think that they are the ones that are making this sort of immigration policy.
And to an extent, if you're a big fan of The West Wing, you know I know The West Wing is fictional, but you know that to an extent, that's pretty much how it works.
Yeah.
The chief of staff is the most powerful man in Washington besides the president.
Right.
Like, more powerful than the vice president. And the legislative aides are the drawbridge between the executive branch and the legislature. So, yeah, it makes sense that they would think that they have some sort of power. I remember reading an article, this is like a side note. I remember reading an article about security clearance over the weekend. About how they increased the amount of security clearance in the White House from 7 people in the Obama administration having the top level security clearance to 14 people in the Trump administration.
Wow.
Because some Trump officials thought it would just be cool to have clearance.
Interesting.
And to get the presidential daily briefing.
Wow.
The highly classified presidential daily briefing. So, like, the way that this White House governs is not based on doing their job.
Right.
It's a lot based on what looks cool and what they can run home to. And then once they're done, they can say, oh, I can work for anybody because I had top level clearance.
Right.
Or I can do anything because I made these legislative advances. They can all run back to the Mercers and get jobs.
Right. Right.
Sinclair Broadcasting. They can all have
executive
suites and do all that. So, you know, don't forget that these people are dangerous because they want to be cool. I mean, if you look at Stephen Miller, look at his past.
Right.
He was the guy who just wanted to be cool.
Yeah.
This is his moment
Didn't
to be
cool.
Didn't
he write an op-ed about how he was so, like, bullied because he went to Santa Monica High, which is here in Los Angeles where we live, and it's very liberal. It's a very liberal area, and he was this staunch, you know, racist Republican, and he's like, I was so bullied because I wasn't liberal.
Right.
Like, that was he wrote a whole op-ed about it.
Right.
He just wanted to be cool.
That's all he wants now. It's like Donald Trump. The entire White House just wants to be cool. They were the people that felt like or seemed probably got rejected growing up, and here they are now governing the United States.
Great. Great.
Great.
So we touched on the government shutdown on Friday. This is the last time the government shut down was 2013.
Correct.
And I also found it very interesting. There was an article on Politico about how the White House doesn't really seem to be taking this very seriously. In the past, you know, presidents during a shutdown are very serious. You know, Obama was very serious when the government shut down in 2013. And it seems like the president is just sort of very cavalier about this, doesn't seem to understand why this is such a big deal.
Well, yeah. I mean, he spent the entire weekend pissed about the fact that he can go to his inaugural party
right.
for $100,000 per person in right. Mar-a-Lago. So, yeah, of course he wasn't being serious about it because he couldn't be around his friends.
Right, right. Exactly. And that's all he really cared about. And even Mick Mulvaney, who's the director of the Office of Management and Budget, told Hannity on Friday that it was, quote, kind of cool to shut down the government because it was his job to, like, you know, close whatever needed to be closed.
Yes, because Mick Mulvaney is like a bulldozer who does not believe in government functioning.
Right. You know, it also reminds me the whole Daily Beast story about Trump not being able to go to his party at Mar-a-Lago and this huge expensive party and the cavalier nature with which he's approaching this whole government shutdown. It just makes me really angry that he's considered or was considered to be such a populist or such like a beacon of hope for like the quote little guy, because obviously, Trump's bottom line is not being affected by this government shutdown.
Right.
The people who are running the government, I mean, obviously, you know, when you draw your salary from the government, you're not getting paid. But for the most part, this is not going to, you know, affect whether or not people can eat this week. The biggest inconvenience about this is that he couldn't get to a party for him. And there's no bigger worry coming from the White House. And I think that that's the difference between someone who is in politics because they feel it's their civic duty and it's a public service, and someone who's in it because they want to seem cool. Because when you're in it for your civic duty to fulfill your need for public service, that is when you get the best, most compassionate leaders, because you're not just in it for yourself.
Right. And I don't know, I would say the last Republican to do that was probably Reagan. I don't know. Bush Sr. was a VP, so he was kind of given
right.
that win. Bush Jr. felt entitled to it.
Right.
So I don't know that. But all the past Democrats that we've had have certainly all been in it for the people.
Right. Yeah. And this whole thing has just really shown that, like you said, the deep incompetence here, that they, right. even with complete control, they don't know what they're doing. And it just makes me so angry because we could have had a really smart, qualified lady in the White House.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, she deleted some emails once and is a woman. So
smashed a few phones.
Yeah. Like, I don't know.
I don't know. What is that? Scrubbed it. What was it? It was scrubbed it.
Or I don't know. You like you shoot it with a gun. I don't know. you like put a bullet in it.
I missed all that.
But, you know, like you said, Drexel, it looks like the government is going to reopen. So it looks like they are coming to an agreement on a stopgap spending bill.
They have. I believe it was like 84 to 8. It was something like 84 to 8 or something like that.
Yeah.
To invoke cloture.
Right.
This morning. And like I said, a lot of those no votes were Democrats. Actually, all the no votes were Democrats. And it was Democrats who will likely be running, including Chris Murphy.
Well, I'm not surprised.
Chris Murphy, I would not be surprised if he jumps into the race in 2020.
He really wants to run for president. You can see it.
Yeah, I think, you know, I know that Sandy Hook really put him on the map. And I know it's crazy to say, but like had Sandy Hook not happened for him, he definitely, because he was... Chris Murphy was just coming into Congress at that time.
Right.
He was just elected at that time. So he didn't really have a legislative record.
Right.
But he's been very good on gun control. And I think that he'll have a hard time with the NRA. Actually, the NRA, I just saw that they're pumping money into like pro-life ads or something crazy. Like they wouldn't normally be in.
Wow.
So we are definitely seeing the NRA expand its reach into areas that, that they shouldn't be, and that's something that we definitely should be afraid of.
Going yeah, into well, the McClatchy DC just had an amazing piece on the NRA and the money that they pumped into the Donald Trump campaign, and then the NRA's connections to Russia and Russian money.
Put it on the whiteboard.
Yeah, so that's going on the whiteboard. We actually don't have time to get into it at all, which is just how bananas this is that we don't have time to talk about something right. as major as that, but. Yeah, so the Senate Democrats have agreed to pass a stopgap spending bill that will keep the government open until February 8th.
Yep.
So I think what I have conflicted feelings about this, because on the one hand, they didn't actually gain anything.
The only thing that we did gain was Chip.
Right. But that was a part of the original package anyway.
Right. That Democrats pushed for. So like right. we can claim victory on Chip.
Okay. Okay. That's fair.
But Republicans will too.
Right.
Because
right.
that's what they
because
framed
they put it together.
They framed it this entire weekend as if they were the proponents of Chip the entire time.
Right.
Because Democrats don't know how to message properly.
Right, right. And so, okay, so we ended up funding the government through February 8th and getting a 6-year renewal on Chip, which is not nothing.
Right.
But we still don't have a clean DACA bill or a clean DREAM Act. We don't have protections for DACA recipients. So I'm frustrated that it basically, we didn't vote to for this bill on Friday, and now we're voting for it on Monday. And it doesn't seem like anything significant has changed in the 60 some odd hours.
You know, it's so interesting. I was talking. I had a really long conversation with a friend of mine between last night and tonight over the shutdown. He, you know, he's been a friend of mine for years, and he just wanted the shutdown to end.
Right.
And I said, yes, I want it to end too. I just don't want Democrats to cave because I don't trust Republicans.
Right.
What I also said was on DACA, I don't know how, like 80% of Americans want protections for Dreamers. Let me rephrase that. 80% of Americans support protections for Dreamers. That doesn't mean that 80% of America, there's a difference in supporting and caring.
Right.
And I think that's something that Democrats have to deal with, because Democrats aren't out there beating down the hatches for DACA recipients. Like, there's no rallies for them. There's nothing happening. And that's something that Republicans see. There's no marches for DACA recipients. Like, we can care and support all we want to, but if there's no pressure,
right.
who's going to care?
Right.
Which is why Democrats don't have, because they know that Chip comes first. They know that military spending comes first. They know that there's going to be another issue down the line later on this year that Americans are going to care about more
than DACA
recipients. Right. It's an easy issue to be like, ho-hum about. Because, yeah, we want to protect our friends' families, loved ones, but it's not to the extent of actually doing something about it.
Wow. Yeah. That's a really good point. So do you think that having that knowledge, Democrats in the Senate went ahead and voted to reopen the government and attach CHIP funding, knowing that Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan might not come through for them on DACA?
I think that they would be smart to know that.
Yeah.
Everything that we've seen from Mitch McConnell has indicated that he is untrustworthy.
Right.
At the same time, you know, I know a lot of people have been like, oh, well, you know, they're like, I mean, all the statements we had from Claire McCaskill, all these people, we had strong commitments from, when has Mitch McConnell's commitments been anything?
Anything.
Not to mention, I said, well, a friend of mine said to me, he said, my friend who I was talking about, he said, is there anything that they could do that would ease your mind on what's been happening? I said, Mitch McConnell would have to come out today mm-hmm. and say, I've scheduled a vote on DACA right now.
Right. Right.
Right now.
That I would maybe think. But the other problem is that it's not just Mitch McConnell that needs to play this game. They need to get Paul Ryan on board as well.
Right.
Because something can pass the Senate and then die in the House.
But Paul Ryan doesn't want the embarrassment of senators bearing down the hatches on the House to do that.
Okay.
So if the Senate passes something first, it might have to nudge Speaker Ryan to get his people in line.
Right.
Or I think they could get every Democrat on board and a handful of, all they need is 218s. So they only need, I don't know,
20.
Maybe 20 to 30 Republicans, which they could easily get.
Yeah, peel them off.
Yeah. And so I, you know, every Republican in California, that's 8 of them right there.
That's true.
You've got the Republicans in Florida. That's a lot of them right there. So yeah. I think there is a path forward on that. But it's going to be really interesting to see how they do that. On the other side of that, they still need the president to sign it.
That's true. That's true. And without a a veto-proof majority.
They would never get it.
They would never get it.
But I don't also don't think that Donald Trump would want the embarrassment of two houses of Congress doing that. And then,
it's true.
And,
although,
and vetoing.
Although I don't know. I don't know.
I mean, he's done some crazy shit.
Yeah. He's so done some shit that him. I stop and I'm like, you didn't think that went all the way through at all.
Right.
So I don't know. I'm pretty upset that we're moving forward like this.
I was hoping for a West Wing style showdown.
I just don't understand. Like you said, yes, now we have this assurance from Mitch McConnell. There's also been, you know, moderate Republicans and Democrats meeting to talk about DACA and getting some of these issues, you know, resolved, including Susan Collins and Joe Manchin. And people are, you know, putting their trust in them and trusting McConnell to, you know, Drexel just rolled his eyes and trusting them to create a deal. But I just feel like the only difference on the vote that we are going to take on Friday versus the vote that we're taking on Monday is
nothing.
This assurance by Mitch McConnell that we're going to talk about DACA.
Yeah.
That's sort of like if my son wants something and I said, well, we can talk about talking about it.
You know what it's like? Hmm. It's like when Ariel signed the scroll from Ursula and then Ursula went back and still stole it.
Yeah.
Stole her man.
Right.
She said, you can have your man. And then went back and stole it.
Yeah.
That's what Mitch McConnell is Ursula. He's Ursula. Forget the turtle.
Right. Forget the turtle. He's Ursula.
Mitch McConnell is Ursula. And we signed the fucking scroll.
I mean, that's what it feels like. That's why I'm upset. It has nothing. I don't want the government to shut down.
Yeah. Nobody wants that. I have lots of friends who are government employees who've been furloughed over the weekend. It's really shitty. I know a lot of my friends overseas who couldn't watch AFN this weekend. And although they did turn it on for the football game, the American Forces Network, for those that don't know. It only has like four channels,
right,
by the way.
Okay.
I used to live overseas. But I was typing away this morning, furious with a friend of mine about this, and then tweeting at the Democrats like, what the fuck is wrong with you people?
Yeah.
And
I feel like voting on this with and the consolation prize is Mitch McConnell's word about something. That's a whole bunch of bullshit.
You know the other side. You know, I also think that a lot of Democrats are frustrated. Hmm. Is because we don't trust the Democrats enough to do something about it.
It's true. Because honestly, like, because they just kind of proved my point here, though,
right,
is that they held the line on Friday. They said, we're not funding the government until we talk about DACA. And then they funded the government less than 60 hours or 60 some odd hours later.
On an assurance from Mitch McConnell.
Right. Which is basically worth about as much as the toilet paper I use to wipe my butt.
Which is what they probably wrote it on.
Right. Is a piece of toilet paper with which to wipe their butts.
Yeah.
And it's also frustrating because we've already passed three stopgap spending bills since October. And it's just one more. It just kicks the can down the road, to use everyone's favorite term these days. Right. Just kicks the can down three more weeks and we're going to have the same fucking problem in 3 weeks.
Right.
And like, I have other things I want to focus on. I don't want to spend this time talking about a government shutdown.
Right. I don't want to spend this time talking about DACA, which is an easy...
Which is a bipartisan thing.
DACA is easy. Immigration...
Is hard. Yeah.
Immigration reform is not hard. Chuck Schumer tweeted out a list of things that needed to get done over the next few weeks right after they decided they were going to reopen the government. And he was like, oh, we have budget negotiations. And I tweeted out, if Chuck Schumer thinks that Mitch McConnell is going to include Democrats in budget negotiations that they don't really need Democrats for in the first place, then he's smoking.
Right, right.
He's come to California.
Yeah, and is getting the legal weed.
He's getting the legal weed, and he's taking it back to New York, and he's smoking on something. So I think that it is, I know these guys have been working together for a long time. It is a little nuts that we have gotten to this point that Democrats can't hold the line.
Yeah.
And Republicans would have.
Oh, are you kidding? Merrick Garland was denied a hearing.
Right.
For a fucking year.
Right. For no reason. The one Supreme Court justice that, or Supreme Court nominee that's probably like the most bipartisan ever.
He was like the white bread of nominees for the Supreme Court.
Right.
He was so uncontroversial.
Although I'm kind of glad he didn't make it, because then Trump would have got to nominate the circuit court justice.
That's true. I mean, look, pros and cons. But the fact of the matter is Merrick Garland should have gotten a fucking hearing.
At least a hearing, yes.
Regardless of anything else. Yeah. And the other thing that bothers me about all this is, like, look, we are the government of the United States of America. We cannot pay our bills month to month.
Right.
That's not how this works.
Yeah.
And all this is doing is cutting into... you know, the time we have to work out the next spending bill, because this next spending bill for 2019 is going to be due.
Well, and in between that time, I believe that there's a State of the Union. I don't know when the State of the Union is scheduled for.
Yeah, that's coming up.
Yeah.
I mean, I know
who knows what crazy's going to say.
I know. Well, Maxine Waters, like, I'm not going to find out.
I don't think any of the Congressional Black Caucus is going.
No, they're not.
Or I read that they might even stage a demonstration during the State of the Union, like a walkout.
Oh.
I'd much prefer them not to do that. Yeah. But
you don't need that.
That's dramatic.
But, yeah.
That's a you lie moment, and we didn't like that when we did it, and so
right.
just and, not show up.
And I also know that a lot of Democratic Congress members who are going to State of the Union are bringing activists as their plus one. Like Jackie Speier from California is bringing Tarana Burke as her plus one. I know that all the women are wearing black. So it's going to be a very interesting State of the Union situation. But the too long didn't read of the story is we need to pay our fucking bills and Democrats need to hold this line.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much what we need to be doing between now and November. Or Democrats are going to be discouraged from voting because they don't think the Democrats are going to fight for even the basic stuff.
Exactly. Because like you said, DACA is easy. Immigration's hard. We're not even asking about immigration.
Right.
We're talking about DACA. Like this should be a no-brainer. This should be something that Democrats can sit down together and say, fuck you, I'm not moving until we resolve this DACA thing.
Right.
And at some point, they played a game of chicken and they lost.
Politics is the ultimate game of chess, and Democrats have lost quite a few pawns.
Hey Hellions, it's me, Sarah, and it's Monday, which means we have another segment of Sarah's Shouty Soapbox. And if you're on Patreon, we actually are starting to do bonus segments of Sarah's Shouty Soapbox with Drexel and Devin reacting to what I have to say. So if you are a Patreon supporter, $5 and up, you get access to that bonus content. And we would really appreciate if you're not a patron, if you wanted to support us, you can go to patreon.com/hellbentpodcast. Okay, so that little plug is done. This topic is really, really heavy. And I know Devin is probably doing a content warning at the beginning of the show, but I want to do another content warning for child sexual abuse. And just make sure if this is a segment that you do not want to listen to, that you have ample time to turn it off or skip ahead. So I'm going to take a little bit of a pause and then I'm going to get started. Okay, so I wanted to talk about Larry Nassar today. And, you know, background for those unfamiliar with this story. So Larry Nassar was the former USA Gymnastics team doctor for about 2 decades. And he pleaded guilty to 7 counts of criminal sexual conduct, and that was in the state of Michigan. And as part of his plea deal, he admitted that he used his position as a trusted medical professional to sexually abuse young girls. He also pleaded guilty to 3 other criminal counts, and he has already been sentenced to 60 years in prison for child pornography charges. It is reported that he has abused at least 140 victims. I've seen some reports say it's closer to 150, and that's over decades. Again, that's just sort of the estimation. It wouldn't surprise me if we found out about more. And actually, 4 out of the 5 members of the quote-unquote Fierce Five from the 2012 Olympics have spoken out and said that he abused them. That includes Ali Raisman, Michaela Maroney, Jordan Weber, and Gabby Douglas. Also, Simone Biles from the 2016 team has said that she has been victimized by Larry Nassar. I wanted to talk about this story because the scale and just the massive institutional failures make this one of the biggest stories in sports history, but it's not garnering the national attention that it merits. And according to Jessica Luther, who's a freelance writer, this story first sort of emerged in September 2016. And, you know, she wrote a piece in BuzzFeed about it, about basically why it's not getting more attention. And she said, quote, "How is this not a bigger scandal? Perhaps because most people only care about gymnastics once every 4 years. And all the victims were girls and women." And, you know, one of the survivors told the Huffington Post, quote, "I remember when the Penn State scandal was talked about at length for months and months and even years. This is nearly five times the size and no one knows about it." Again, I want to underline that there are at least 140, some say 150 victims. It's just completely mind-blowing. Now, this story may have entered or re-entered your radar because of Ali Raisman's impact statement a few days ago, which was absolutely amazing and had me in tears, so I want to read some passages from it. She said, quote, "I'm here to face you, Larry, so you can see I've regained my strength, that I am no longer a victim. I am a survivor. I am no longer that little girl you met in Australia where you first began grooming and manipulating. You caused me a great deal of physical, mental, and emotional pain. As for your letter yesterday, you're pathetic to think that anyone would have any sympathy for you. You think this is hard for you? Imagine how all of us feel. Imagine feeling like you have no power and no voice. Well, you know what, Larry? I have both power and voice, and I am only beginning to just use them. The women you so heartlessly abuse over such a long period of time are now a force, and you are nothing. I will not rest until every last trace of your influence on this sport has been destroyed like the cancer that it is." I would say that whole 13-minute clip is worth your time. Deadspin has it, so if you Google Ali Raisman at Deadspin, you should find it at the top of your Google search results. Please watch it if you feel like you are able to. That last part of what I read from Raisman's impact statement, I think, is one of the most important ones, because Ali ripped into USA Gymnastics and the people in powerful institution. Because Ali ripped into USA Gymnastics and the people in powerful positions across institutions. That's including the US Olympic Committee. And I don't know if she referenced Michigan State, but Michigan State was where Nassar was once employed. And there was one report that says 14 Michigan State reps heard about Nassar's abuses over the course of two decades and did nothing. You know, I just think it really highlights how so many adults failed these children. And these children are now women. Many of them are now women. You know, Ali Raisman also talked about how USA Gymnastics announced that the Caroli Ranch would no longer be a national team training site. And that was on the same day that athletes were still training there. So for her, it showed another instance of how words are empty. You know, they don't mean anything until meaningful action is taken. And from her standpoint, top to bottom change is necessary. And I think this is a big part of what Me Too hopes to accomplish, to ultimately change the culture so that no one turns the other way anymore, so that meaningful consequences are implemented across the board, so that we get to a point where sexual harassment and assault are no longer tolerated at any level, where it can one day be stamped out altogether. There's so much more to the story that I can't cover because, you know, I try to keep these segments relatively short, but I just want to leave you with what Jordan Weber said in court. She said, quote, "Larry Nassar is accountable. USA Gymnastics is accountable. The US Olympic Committee is accountable. My teammates and friends have been through enough, and now it's time for change because the current and future gymnasts do not deserve to live in anxiety, fear, or be unprotected like I was."
Okay, Devin, it's that time again.
Yeah.
A little gratitude check.
Yes. So this past weekend, I went to the Women's March in Los Angeles. I was there at Pershing Square. It was so powerful, every bit as powerful as it was last year. Last year, there were about 750,000 people in downtown Los Angeles. And this year, estimates range between like 600,000 and 700,000. So a pretty comparable turnout, to be honest. I was really impressed.
I say people, you say power, people!
Power!
People!
was just a really wonderful reminder of what started all of this for me. I went to the Women's March right before Sarah and I started this podcast. Our 1 year anniversary is actually January 31st. It's coming out. I know. And so I just remember going to the one last year and having this overwhelming feeling of like, yes, we need to do something. We need to get this done. We need to band together. And really that feeling that was instilled. And then everyone kept saying, oh, you're going to burn out. Oh, this isn't sustainable. Like, oh, everyone's going to show up for this. And then it's going to be nothing. This is nothing. And the fact that not only did that not happen, but pretty much the exact opposite of that happened. I feel like as the year has gone on, there, you know, the energy has just kept building. You know, people have run for office. People are making phone calls. People are using the momentum that the Women's March started. And then to have the year end capped by a second Women's March that was just as energetic and just as like steeped in that feeling of possibility. You know, I was talking to my friend, that one of our fellow Hellions, Lindsay, that I went with, and we were talking about signs we saw last year versus signs we saw this year. A lot of the signs last year were, you know, not my president, Putin's puppet, you know, because it was really protesting the inauguration, protesting the fact that Trump won it all.
Right.
And this year, the signs were basically like, we're still here. Like, fuck you and fuck these policies. And, you know, we're voting. You know, my superpower is voting. And we are going to vote your asses out of office, basically.
Right.
And it was very powerful. It was a really great kind of boost in energy. You know, it can be hard. You know, we talk about this all the time: self care, getting through all of this, burnout, fatigue, rage. It can be a lot. And going and just seeing everyone march together and have it be such like a positive, inspiring thing was just really fantastic.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun to see everybody's photos and you know, I wish I could have been out there. I told Devin, I was like, that amount of people stresses me out a little bit,
because
I get really claustrophobic in large groups, but it looked like a lot of fun, and a lot of my friends were there, and seeing like Viola Davis and Scarlett Jo with her speech, and it was really, really great to see, and not only here in Los Angeles, but Asheville, North Carolina had a huge turnout.
Yeah,
I think one of the largest. Dallas, New York, obviously had a big turnout. So there was a lot of turnouts all across the country, and I think that Washington D.C. and I think that's what was inspiring to see, and hopefully that carries into 2018.
Yeah. I mean, I really think it will. I also got to see one of our Hellions, Hillary. She was at
the 25th booth.
Yes. Yeah, I got to see her, which was really cool. And yeah, I mean, and you know, in addition to all those cities, like Chicago's turnout was bigger this year than it was last year. I mean, so this like momentum, and I think just the fact that everyone said, all of the media stories were like, is this going to die out quickly or very quickly? That was basically the narrative last year. Like, how long is this energy going to last? And the answer is, go fuck yourself.
Right.
It's going to last as long as it needs to last.
Right.
Which I thought was really awesome. So that's mine. So Drexel, what are you grateful for today?
I think I touched on a little bit last week. I know I just came back from vacation/bachelor party. But I definitely want to shout out not only my team country, but my two best friends, Carly and Tyler, who really put that whole week together. I mean, if you follow me on Instagram, you saw that there was a 10-page document that they put together, 12 pages.
It was amazing.
And everything was so meticulous. Everything was so thoughtful. And I think that everybody should have friends like that.
Seriously.
Friends that take the time to kind of go out of their way to research. You know, there are things that I learned, like guys have to leave the room for strippers in Louisiana, like stuff like things that they just obscure facts that you would have never thought about.
Right.
So you know, I'm internally grateful for those friends, especially the other two that were there and the other three that weren't there. It was a good week last week. And
did Tim have a good trip too? I know he was there, but separately.
He was there. They definitely did. It's so crazy because my group, we're like, you know, 20, the age range is 27 to 31 or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we were acting like we were fucking 21-year-olds. Right. Like our side was. Like we had never had a, like we were out there, like we were drinking, like we knew what to do. like we could sustain. I actually made all of, every time that we went out, I would make everybody take emergency to cure the hangover.
Smart.
And I would be like, guys, we're old. Don't forget. You need to take this emergency before you go out. Not only is it 30 degrees, but you need to do that. But if you looked at Tim's stuff, I mean, they were doing face masks and playing board games at certain points because it was so cold out. And we were out there just gallivanting down, gallivanting down Bourbon Street like we had not a care in the world. I think they had a really good time. And, you know, a lot of those guys had never met before. And so it was really good. We got a really good group, and that's going to be with us in June. So, yeah. So, Devin, who is our dickwad of the week?
Well, this week it is an entire office. It is the Health and Human Services. So a lot of weird shit has been going on at Health and Human Services.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, a lot of weird shit. And I actually, when last week I was doing some research into this and I wanted to make today's show about Health and Human Services and the weird shit that's been going on. They've been having some weird personnel changes. There's just a lot of hinky going on. But specifically, the HHS is a dickwad of the week because they just put out protections, quote unquote protections, for people who didn't want to provide certain healthcare services. So on Thursday, HHS announced a new office to protect doctors and nurses who object to providing abortion services and other medical care on moral and religious grounds. So this is married with Trump's assertion that he would protect religious freedoms for, I guess, Christians, because he doesn't seem to have any problem saying that all Muslims are banned from our country. So that religious freedom, I guess, doesn't matter to him. Drexel's face is perfect right now. So these new rules, they're designed to protect healthcare workers who decline to provide certain services such as abortions. And critics say that this could lead to all sorts of discrimination, obviously. You know, because if you think about it, it starts with, I don't want to provide abortion services. But then what if you feel that you don't want to take on transgender patients?
Right.
What if you don't want to work with gay people? Or
the Pandora's box definitely opens up when you start doing shit that you're not supposed to be doing.
Right. And even if it doesn't go that way, this still could lead to serious, you know, the compromising of women's health, because, you know, women, abortion care is health care. Like it is Roe v. Wade. Today is what, the 45th anniversary of Roe v. Wade. It is legal to get an abortion in this country,
right?
And abortion care is health care. And so when you start saying that certain parts of health care are, you're allowed to deny to women because they seek them, it's a very slippery slope, one that we've talked about before,
right? And you know, I at the top of what you were talking about, Donald Trump described himself as pro-choice in every respect, that's not the party that he's a part of,
right?
And I think that's something that people have to remember. Like, Donald Trump has no morals,
right?
He doesn't understand. I bet you if Donald, I mean, if you remember in the debates, if you had to talk policy, Donald Trump was able to get away with all three debates without saying a single policy issue.
Right.
So if you had Donald Trump get out there to try to explain his positions on policy, it would, I mean, you could find better responses in a ninth grade government class.
Oh, seriously. And I mean, this also kind of links back to when he was like, I have a big heart and I'm going to protect Dreamers.
Or when he was waving that rainbow flag around.
Larry Decker, who's the executive director for the Secular Coalition, said, quote, this move by the Trump administration does not protect conscience, but instead weaponizes it, turning religious belief into yet another barrier between vulnerable patients and the healthcare they need. The right to conscience does not include the right to impose your conscience on others.
Right.
And I think that I don't understand why this is such a difficult concept. You can believe whatever you want to believe. This isn't about limiting your religious freedom or your right to religious expression. This is about when you are a medical provider, you must provide medical care.
Even if you
don't like it.
Especially if there was a racist coming in and a black person was, or any minority saw a swastika on them. We've seen it in a Grey's Anatomy episode. For those who watch Grey's Anatomy, I know you've seen it. And we've seen that. But they have an obligation to provide medical care to whomever
comes in
adequately.
Right, exactly. And so I think that when you put it in those terms where it's like, well, could a racist doctor deny a black patient care? And so many people are quick to say, no, that's ridiculous. Then why can you say an anti-choice doctor can deny abortion care to a woman? How is that different?
Because in this country, we've clearly gotten slightly past racial issues before we've gotten past women's issues, as we've seen.
Right.
So, and we haven't even gotten past the racial issues.
Right.
So if that's any indication as to why, then, then that's the reason. So, yeah, Republicans will always, always be an us versus them.
Right.
Until they either die out or get what they want. Okay, Devin, last but not least, what can we do today?
All right. So, Hellions, for action items, first and foremost, we all need to keep up pressure for a Clean Dream Act to make sure DACA recipients are protected. Like we were saying earlier, we're not even talking about immigration. We're talking about DACA. And while Democrats have voted to reopen the government with the assurances from Mitch McConnell that this will be a topic that to be discussed, we need to make sure we're calling our representatives and let them know that if we have to go through this all over again on February 8th, then we have to. We have to get a Clean Dream Act passed,
right.
Period. And, like I said, we're just delaying the inevitable. This whole process is going to repeat itself around February 8th. We need to be aware of that. And we need to make sure our lawmakers know where we stand in terms of how we move past that February 8th deadline.
Yeah, I think that there's definitely enough vocal Democrats, and what I've seen on my Twitter timeline, prominent Democrats who are not elected officials, but who did not like what went down today. And if Mitch McConnell does not set a date between now and February 8th, or if there's no movement on DACA before March, because everybody kept saying, even Mick Mulvaney, when he was in the press briefing room, kept saying, oh, we've got until March. Well, why do you have to wait until the last second?
Right, right. Exactly.
That doesn't make any sense.
Exactly.
You didn't wait to the last second on tax reform.
Right. Right. Yeah. And for whatever reason, you need to do that
real quick.
Real quick.
Right. No debate.
Yeah.
Somebody said to me today, Democrats will get a chance to debate on immigration. I was like, no, they won't. Yeah. We couldn't even debate on tax reform.
Yeah.
So what makes you think we're going to be able to get a word in edgewise on immigration?
Yeah. So don't let this Republican messaging sway you here. Right. Like there's no reason to wait till the last second. And Republicans obviously have no problem moving quickly on things that are important to them.
Right.
So we need to remember that.
Right.
And then my second action item is just from what I mentioned in Dickwad, HHS is being weird and hinky, but they set policy on abortion, on access to healthcare, patients, patient rights, family planning. These are all things that are very important, and I don't think we pay enough attention to this very important office.
I don't even think there's an HHS secretary right now.
Right, because Tom Price
resigned
right? In scandal over... I mean, the fact that we don't have an appointed secretary of Health and Human Services should tell you a lot.
Right.
So there is something
weird. The inmates are running the asylum.
Exactly. So we need to keep our eye on it because something real weird is going on over there.
Right.
So, all right, Drexel, that is it for us.
I'm so sad.
I know. It was really fun. I'm so glad to have you back.
I'm glad to be back. I'm glad to feel better. I'm glad to see you.
Yes.
I'm excited for Thursday's episode.
Yes, me too. We have a great guest lined up. Just remember to follow Drexel at Drexel Herd.
That's right.
On Twitter. And I will see you back here on Thursday.
Bye.
Thank you.